This is Legends, Voices, and Pain, written by Rua, read by Mistborn Hero, a Stormlight Archive podfic, featuring the relationship Rushu-Seth. It is tagged for post-canon, canon divergence, queer platonic relationships, Arrow Ace Rushu, Arrow Ace Seth, mental health issues, building trust, made up religious lore, minor religious questionings. Summary. Rushu asks Seth about one of the legends the Shin believe as the two of them share a meal. The conversation leads to Seth telling her about some of his struggles. Author notes. This scene is separated from the first work in the series by anywhere between a few weeks and a couple of months. Rushu and Seth emerged into one of Urethra's balconies. The evening air was cool, but not uncomfortably so. The sun had just set, leaving a fading burst of light and color at the western horizon. The sky overhead was clear, and several stars were visible. Salas was rising in the east, a violent disk against the dark, velvety blue of the sky. Rushu and Seth sat at one of the several unoccupied tables arranged in the relatively small space. Rushu took the food and drinks she had packed earlier out of her satchel and set them on the table. She looked up to see Seth staring at the first moon, seeming thoughtful. "The moons have different names in Shinovar, right?" she asked. "Yes," he answered. Rushu tapped her fingers on the table, trying to remember what she had read.
"What do you call them again?"
"They are the three sisters. This," he gestured toward Salas, "is the first sister."
"That's right," Rushu said. "I remember reading that now. Why do you call them sisters? I haven't been able to find any reliable sources about that."
Seth was quiet for a few moments, and Rushu took the opportunity to divide the food between them. She hadn't known what kinds of food Seth liked, so she had just brought the same type of simple meal she had seen him eat before. She had brought a bottle of orange wine for them to drink. Seth took his food with a nod, then began to speak. "The sun and the moon are gods to my people. The sun is the god of gods, and the three sisters are his daughters." Rushu reached down for a pen and some paper, completely forgetting about her food.
"What stories do your people have about the three sisters?"
Seth took a sip of his wine. "Long ago," he began, setting his cup down, "the ancestors of my people were without a place to live. They had been exiled from their previous home and could never return. The God of Gods presented them with a new home, one of which he had created to resemble the place they had left. His daughters were in disagreement over his decision. The first sister believed that my people should be left to wander. They had proven unworthy of their previous home, and would prove to be unworthy of this one as well. She believed that their exile was well earned and should never end." Seth paused briefly. While Rushu took notes, she wondered if he was remembering his own exile from his homeland. She couldn't imagine what it would be like to be so completely separated from her own culture. As an ardent, she did feel like an outsider most of the time, but she at least still had a place in Borinism. But to be completely cast away, with nothing to anchor her, the very thought made her shiver.
he soon continued. The second sister was more moderate in her opinion. She believed that my people could be welcome as long as they proved that they were capable of change. Their wandering could end as long as they kept to their oaths. The third sister welcomed my people without reservation. Her heart ached for their loss. She believed that nobody should be left without a place to call home, regardless of their past deeds. Rushu finished her notes, then looked up when he didn't continue his story. Is that all? Seth shook his head. They argued, he said, softly, for many days. The first and the third sisters were in disagreement. They said many things that they would both later regret. The God of Gods demanded that they obey his will, but the sisters did not listen. This is our land as well, they told him. We do not give it up simply because you demand it of us. Their father subsided, and the fighting continued. What about the second sister? Rushu asked, writing furiously. She attempted to remain neutral, he answered. She disliked the conflict and wished to remain removed from it, but the first and the third sisters could not reach an agreement. Neither would be swayed from her chosen course. The second sister came to the realization that she would have to be the one to make the ultimate decision. She approached the other two one night during one of their many disagreements. Sisters, she said, I may have a solution. The other two were aware of their desire to be uninvolved and were unwilling to listen. What could you have to offer? They asked. We will allow them to live in our land, the second sister replied. As long as they keep the oaths they have sworn to follow. Anyone who breaks these oaths will be cast out, never to return. These oath-breakers will be cursed to wander as those before them did, but unlike their predecessors, they will never find a place to rest. They will forever be known as the ones without truth. Truthless. Rushu felt a chill, completely unrelated to the cooling air, creep across her skin. She wanted to ask more, but she didn't know what to say. What could she say after something like that? Seth spoke again, after a few moments of heavy silence. The sisters reached their agreement. My people would be given the land promised them by the God of Gods, so long as they held their word. As it was the second sister who brought about the end of the conflict, my people swore oaths by her name. He stopped speaking for several long breaths. It was by her light that I was named Truthless. Rushu looked up from her notes to see Seth staring westward towards where a thin line of light and color were the only hints of the sunset. She realized that he was also looking towards Shinovar. There was barely enough light for her to be able to see his distant, haunted expression. She again felt a stab of sorrow at the thought of the things he must have gone through since his exile. She reached out to touch one of his hands, which rested on the surface of the table. As soon as she touched his hand, he suddenly became tense and rigid, as if he had been soul cast to stone. She pulled her hand back. I'm sorry, she said, shuffling her notes. I didn't mean to startle you. He nodded, but didn't speak. You don't like being touched? She said. She wanted to be sure that she understood the cause of his reaction. I do not, he said, shaking his head. Rushu almost asked why, but caught herself just in time. She didn't have to think hard to come up with several explanations. She didn't know which, if any, were correct, but she managed to restrain herself from asking further questions. She looked down, noticing her mostly untouched meal. She took a bite, chewing as she thought over what Seth had just shared. She looked up a short time later. You've heard about the translated accounts of how humans came to Rashar, right? Seth nodded. He seemed to be picking at his food more than actually eating it. Your story supports those claims remarkably well, she said, twirling her eating skewer in the fingers of her right hand as she started to get excited. They were wandering without home because they had destroyed their last world. The conflicts between the first and the third sisters could represent the relationship between the humans and the singers in those early days. The second sister's intervention could represent the agreement they eventually reached. There are obviously elements of that agreement that still permeate your culture to this day, which is incredible when you think about it. It's estimated that humans came to Rashar at least 7,000 years ago. If your people have maintained even semi-accurate accounts over all that time? Rushu trailed off, her mind racing with the implication as she began making notes to herself again. Is this one of your scholarly pursuits? Seth asked. Yes, Rushu said, absent-mindedly, still mostly focused on her writing. She wrote for a moment longer, then paused to read over her notes. It's not just your beliefs I'm curious about, she said as she read. I question aspects of Borinism too. There are things that just don't make sense when you think about them objectively, but other Ardents don't like it when I ask too many questions. I know now that the divide between light eyes and dark eyes comes from people associating light-colored eyes with the night's radiant and their place in society, but other things... She made more notes, losing herself in her thoughts for an undefinable period of time. Do you still believe in the Shin religion, Seth? Rushu eventually asked. It was dark enough that she was having trouble seeing her notes. Salas didn't give enough light to read easily. I do not know, he answered quietly. The things I was taught were true have proven to be false. That is why I now follow a greater ideal. You've sworn yourself to Bright Lord Dalinar, Rushu said. She looked up to see that Seth had set a diamond sphere in the middle of the table for light. He nodded. He can still make mistakes, though, she said. You said that you should follow a greater ideal, but how is following Bright Lord Dalinar better than following your own judgment? He was quiet for several long moments, seeming to stare directly into the light of the sphere. I cannot rely upon my own judgment, my own mind. I can rely upon Dalinar calling. I may have sworn to a flawed ideal, but I have chosen the best option available to me. What about the other Skybreakers? They swore to follow Nail, right? Yes, he whispered. Nin Sung God is just as flawed as any man, perhaps even more. Rushu paused. She still had trouble wrapping her mind around the fact that Seth had interacted with one of the Heralds on several occasions. The Heralds were legends, not people. They especially weren't people who were scarred by millennia of alternating fighting and torture, as Seth had previously explained. How could she reconcile that with the belief she had held to since she was a girl barely old enough to learn her first letters? She caught herself before she could get lost in those thoughts, forcing her mind back to her conversation with Seth. What was he talking about? She thought. She mentally retraced the paths her mind had traveled over the past moments, then remembered. So, no matter what you choose, she finally said, you would have sworn a flawed ideal.
Yes, he said again. My Heisbrunn had told me that if I am to progress, I must find the truth for myself, becoming the law.
You said that you can trust your own judgment. Why is that? There was another long moment of silence before he answered.
Every time I have trusted my own judgment, he finally said, it has led to disaster. I cannot know what is ultimately true. I can no longer trust my own mind.
What do you mean? Seth sighed softly.
The people I have killed haunt me. I hear their voices in darkness and shadow. They whisper at me, condemn me, tear at my mind. I fear that I have gone mad. A madman cannot make a sound judgment, so I follow someone who can.
Rushu shivered slightly. Does anyone help with the voices? She asked carefully. Seth gestured towards the sphere.
Light pushes them away, making it easier to think.
Rushu nodded. Do you know if there's a reason or a cause for them?
Nin Sun God told me that he believes I am hearing echoes from the spiritual realm.
Rushu used the light of Seth's sphere to write more notes. Fascinating. So there is more direct evidence of the existence of a spiritual realm. It's easy to prove that Shadesmar is real, but a realm where time and space don't exist as we understand them? That's harder to verify. What you just told me, though.
Are you not disturbed?
Seth asked. It took Rushu a moment to process his question. What? She looked up again. No, why would I be? He cocked his head lightly to one side, seeming genuinely confused.
I just told you that I am mad, that I hear the voices of people killed by my own hand. You have not reacted in the way I have come to expect. I do not understand.
What you said is strange, she said. But I wouldn't say I'm disturbed. I am a little concerned, but not because I'm afraid. I'm concerned more for your well-being in general. It sounds like living with that is difficult.
It's more difficult than you can imagine, he whispered, staring at his sphere again.
Rushu wanted to do something to help, but she didn't know what. She hated this feeling of helplessness. Someone else might have known what to do or what to say, but she certainly didn't. She sighed.
I'm sorry.
Seth glanced up at her.
Why are you apologizing?
Every time we talk, I seem to unintentionally bring up something that hurts you. I don't like causing you pain.
His lips briefly twitched into a faint, humorless smile. Everything brings me pain, he whispered.
Rushu's heart twisted and she looked away. She didn't want Seth to see her expression. Seth eventually sighed again. Rushu looked up to see him picking up his sphere and standing.
Good night, Rushu. Thank you for the meal.
Good night, Seth. He nodded to her, then turned and re-entered the tower, holding his sphere ahead of himself as he went. Rushu looked after him until long after he was out of view, thinking of legends, voices, and pain. She again wished she could do something, anything to help. With just the dim light of Celeste to see by, she looked down and drew two glyph words on an empty page of her notebook, one for comfort and the other for wisdom. She would burn them when she got back to her room. The end. I recorded part one, Crossing Paths, for ITP as a gift for Kitona, and this one I'm just recording for challenges. I like seeing Seth and Rush's relationship grow. There is actually four fics in the series by now, so I might record some of those. So anyway, I hope you've also enjoyed seeing this relationship grow and had fun listening. And please remember to drink some water today.